Good morning, everyone. Bonjour and bienvenue à Louisiane. I am a Louisiana native. I'm from Baton Rouge, and so I'm just so excited and thrilled that APHA was close to home. I live in Texas, but I'm still trying to make my way back here to Louisiana. So I hope that you're enjoying yourself. The weather's kind of off today, but I hope that you're enjoying yourself. And before I get into my presentation, I found that it's a good way to connect with my audience is to kind of be transparent about how I got interested in breastfeeding in the first place, right? So I did my undergraduate in nutrition dietetics at LSU in Baton Rouge. And in nutrition of the life cycle, I learned about the importance of breastfeeding and just how beneficial it is not only to the infant health, as we all know, but also to maternal health, as the panel has already described. But what was so baffling to me is that I had not seen anyone breastfeed in my own family. As a matter of fact, the first time I ever saw someone breastfeed was on a field trip to the Louisiana State Capitol. And it was a young white mother trying to discreetly breastfeed her baby in a corner. But as a 10-year-old, I was quite baffled as to what she could possibly be doing to her baby. And then my mother was, you know, explaining to me, well, she's breastfeeding, that, you know, that's okay. That's actually what breasts, you know, are meant for. They can do that. And so over the years, as I learned more and more about breastfeeding and I've seen the disparities for African-American women like myself, it's just made me kind of want to dig more into this issue. And so the title of my presentation is African-American Mothers Breastfeeding 6 Months and Beyond, you know, I think of to infinity and beyond, a positive deviance inquiry of WIC participants in the state of Georgia. I did this research as part of my dissertation at the University of Georgia. Go Dawgs. So firstly, when I say African-American, Camille presented on foreign-born black mothers, I was trying to pinpoint African-American mothers who were probably not first or second generation Americans here in the U.S., and so I'm distinguishing African-American from overall black ethnicity. And I don't have any financial disclosures, but I am a postdoc funded by a T32 grant from the NICHD, and so these thoughts are my own and not theirs. So as a quick overview, very briefly talking about breastfeeding in African-American women, we kind of already know what are the gaps in the literature, what we do know, what we don't know. Briefly talk about what positive deviance is, because for most of you, when you think of deviance, you maybe only think of delinquency or criminal activity or something that behavior that deviates from the norm in only a negative way, but there is behavior that deviates from a social norm in a positive way, and that's what we mean by positive deviance. And so here in italics was the title of my dissertation, and so we'll go through that, and as well as discuss the so what, why do we care? You're the last panelist, just bring it all home, right? So hopefully you'll be inspired and empowered to take the information from myself and the rest of the panel beyond Ernest Morial Convention Center and into wherever you are in this country or in other settings. So this is an infographic from the wonderful It's Only Natural campaign that was released in the spring of last year. And evaluation data has shown that this campaign has been very effective in reaching African-American mothers to promote breastfeeding, especially through social media outlets. And what I like about this campaign is the language, particularly that that they use in this campaign, because a lot of times when we talk about the health disparity of breastfeeding, it's kind of framed from a negative perspective, like, woe is the woman who did not breastfeed. How can we help her? She has no agency. She has no sense of power. We can give her all the information in the world, but poor thing, she just won't be able to do it. But here it says more and more moms are breastfeeding, right? So it's kind of like, yeah, let's do this. Let's get more women to do this. And so it also shows the jump in breastfeeding rates from 2000 for African-American mothers from 47% to 62%. So it is acknowledging that, hey, we have been doing a pretty good job. Let's make sure that we don't drop the ball and keep the ball rolling. But what I was particularly interested in, because
I feel that these women are outliers in most of our quantitative studies, are the women that are able to breastfeed 6 months and longer. And so here from this infographic, and this is from National Immunization Survey data, says that 36% of African American babies that were born in the year 2010 were breastfed at 6 months. So it's like, we don't hear that. Raise your hand if you feel like you hear this in discussions on breastfeeding African American women. You probably don't. So my question was, how? So if we look at what are the gaps in the literature, as I've already said, the majority of the research is quantitative, and that's, I'm not here to bash quantitative. I'm actually in my postdoc trying to get better at quantitative methodology, so that is not my intention at all. But by doing population-level data, when we have women that may be perhaps outliers, that 36%, we're not getting at the nuances as to how they're able to successfully breastfeed. Are they that much different from other African-American mothers? And a lot of the research is needs-based, is what's the problem, what needs to be done, and how can we fly in as researchers and land and give them our expertise? And so qualitative methods are needed because there's few studies that examine the breastfeeding experiences. A lot of the qualitative literature does focus groups or interviews on, so tell me why you didn't breastfeed, or why did you breastfeed only to a week? Tell us about how you felt when you had early cessation of breastfeeding, or the barriers, or the lack of discussion around breastfeeding. And I love this quote from Asiatu and Flaskerud that says, the African American mothers' voices are absent in much of the lactation literature. So if you think of yesterday in our wonderful opening session from Isabel Wilkinson, she talks about how in the Great Migration that it was the lowest caste of people that realized, hey, we do have agency, we do have choice, we don't have to settle for this. And so I think this is kind of what the panel is getting at, is when mothers have a sense of agency, when they're empowered with information, when they're empowered with social support, they can make that decision to breastfeed. And so asset-based approaches are useful in addressing health of underserved women. And so in that article by Files 2007, she talks about community-based participatory research, participatory action research, or positive deviance as methodologies that kind of shift that power dynamic between researcher and the woman that you're interested in asking her about breastfeeding or whatever the health issue is, and kind of learn what is already working and how can we maybe bring that to scale. So what is positive deviance? Again, if you think of deviance on a spectrum, the actual definition is just deviating from a social norm. So if you just think of deviating from the social norm, if we think of, for example, college culture of binge drinking, and maybe there's a student that abstains from drinking or drinks responsibly, that's deviating from the norm in a positive or favorable way for their health, correct? So positive deviance is an asset-based approach to identify solutions to community problems within the community. Oftentimes, as researchers in health, we think that if there's a problem in a community, that perhaps there's solutions outside of the community, but perhaps there are already solutions within the community that we just need to maybe help facilitate, bring people to a table, have conversations about it, and we can just amp up what's already been working. So positive deviance specifically is studying people who are considered positive deviants, or individuals employing uncommon yet beneficial practices for better health in resource poor communities. Last year I had the opportunity when we talked about Think Global, Act Local. So positive deviance comes out of the field of international nutrition from the Save the Children research, where say in settings such as Mumbai, India, you would expect for children that are born in the slums to perhaps be malnourished, but they actually found that there were children that were thriving in that setting, and that baffled them. And they wanted to know, well, what are these mothers doing right to nourish their children in an environment where it's not really conducive to adequate nutrition and development? And so positive deviance inquiry is actually the third step of the positive deviance methodology, where you're discovering the unique practices, behaviors of individuals you've identified as positive deviants. Y'all still with me? Okay. So the purpose for my dissertation was to explore the breastfeeding experiences of low-income African-American women using the positive deviance approach. And if I can just be transparent, doing this work, the word low-income really started to bother me because it kind of felt, you know, that I'm projecting this state or this class onto this person. And so I'm using this because that was the original language, but as I went throughout the journey of meeting these women and talking with not only them but their WIC peer counselors, it began to wonder, you know, again, going back to the language that we use when we frame certain health issues could also be very disempowering. So the research questions: how did mothers form the intention to breastfeed during pregnancy? So thinking about the prenatal period, as Camille mentioned about the theory of planned behavior, what are the attitudes, the normative beliefs, or what's going on with their self-efficacy or their sense of control? Moving on to the early postpartum period and labor and delivery, what enabled mothers to initiate and sustain breastfeeding during the first few weeks after birth? And my favorite research question, what enabled them to continue breastfeeding for 6 months or longer? So this was a multi-phase qualitative study, and I'm pleased to tell you that I actually, the focus group, part of it will be published with the Journal of Human Lactation in the Equity and Breastfeeding special issue coming out in February. So if you're interested more in that, I'll feel free to talk to me afterwards, but that will be coming out. But also, the focus groups were really important in helping me find my participants for the individual interviews, because using WIC peer counselors as gatekeepers helped me find my participants and also helped me establish rapport with the women that I was looking to interview. And so for the individual interviews, I wanted to explore their breastfeeding experience of African American women that were in the Georgia WIC program. And so I did use being in WIC as a proxy for low income, because we do know about the federal guidelines for income for the WIC program. So as far as recruitment, using WIC peer counselors as gatekeepers is mostly how I did find my participants. So the eligibility criteria for them to be considered a positive deviant was that they had to be age 18 or over, I'd self-identify as African American, currently be a participant in the Georgia WIC program, have a breastfeeding history of at least 6 months, which that ended up being very challenging, because going through WIC peer counselors as gatekeepers, they're excited, you're excited, they're giving your research flyer to any breastfeeding mom who's African American that they can find. And sometimes I had participants call and I wasn't prepared to say, oh, well, you haven't breastfed for 6 months. And then I was left wondering if I put that mom in a very awkward place in her identity for telling her she wasn't eligible for my study. So just, I love to be transparent about that process. And they had to try to prevent recall bias, have had a breastfed child that's age 2 or younger. And so purposive sampling just means I was recruiting people who would meet the research purpose that I was trying to accomplish. So recruitment flyers given to WIC offices and peer counselors in 3 health districts in the state of Georgia. And this was not Atlanta. It was not the city of Atlanta, just to give you more about that. So these districts were more suburban or rural. And interested participants called me, and I used a screening tool to make sure that they met the eligibility criteria. And here's my little flyer. So interviews were semi-structured format, just meaning that they were very conversational, flexible. If I had a question, and I'll show you the interview guide on the next line, if I had a question, say, about when they were working or when they transitioned back to work, but the mom brought that up sooner, it was fine. We could just kind of flow at whatever pace she wanted to do. So they're about 60 minutes in length. The shortest one was about 35, 40 minutes because I interviewed a mom at the public library and she couldn't find a babysitter, so she brought two of her kids and they kept wanting to talk into the recorder and they needed to go poo or they wanted to play on the internet, and so she was just like, I'm sorry, I think this is about all I can give you. Whereas I had another interview, I think that went about 90 minutes. So 60 minutes was what I told them when I was recruiting them about how long it would take. So participants' homes is mostly where I did interviews, but I was also flexible if they felt more comfortable at the public library. I interviewed someone in a coffee shop and also at McDonald's. So if you're going to do this work, just be open and be flexible. And there was a brief demographic survey asking them about their breastfeeding history, their educational status, their marital status, and things of that nature. All interviews were audio recorded and professionally transcribed, and they were analyzed using thematic analysis, which is just kind of like the basic way for analyzing qualitative data. You're looking at your patterns, and you're using patterns to develop themes in response to your research questions. And in vivo software was very useful in helping me to code and to make sense of the wonderful data. And just to give you some more information, I did do member checks. So once I did have all of my themes and kind of have more of a report, I did send that out to my participants and ask them if they had any feedback. And most of all, they just were happy to see, you know, their words in a report and kind of have something tangible to show that they participated in the study. Oh, wow, I'm just running my mouth. Okay. So here's the interview guide, and we can come back to that if you're interested. So participants, so there were 11 participants. Mean age was about 29 years. But if I can just move the cursor, if you look at educational level, over half had some college, a third had college degree. When I did my job talk for my postdoc, my supervisor was like, we never hear about WIC mothers and having college education. There's WIC mothers that are teachers. So just to kind of challenge the stereotypes that we have about who is a WIC mother was also part of this process for me. So here's positive deviance profiles, and since it's World Prematurity Day, I'll tell you a little bit about Zipporah, my first participant. She had HELLP syndrome, which is a life-threatening complication, kind of like preeclampsia, that led her to preterm labor. And so she talked about how for her first child, she was almost, you know, fatal herself, and then her baby was in the NICU for several months, but the fact that she was determined to breastfeed and still able to provide milk to her baby helped her baby to flourish. And later on for her second baby, she tandem breastfed. And so if you're interested in hearing more about these wonderful, wonderful 11 women, I would love to tell you more. So the overall narrative from this research was there's not a lot of us, meaning there's not a lot of African-American mothers that you visibly see breastfeeding, and if they are breastfeeding, you don't see them out in public. Person to person, everybody's different, meaning breastfeeding experiences did vary from child to child. And so the main themes were deciding to breastfeed, initiating breastfeeding, breastfeeding long-term, and gaps in breastfeeding support. So deciding to breastfeed. Most participants did have a family history of breastfeeding, and a lot of what you'll see in these themes is consistent with the literature about family history, about having the mother-partner support. 8 of the 11 specifically did mention that their partners were supportive. Cost and convenience weren't commonly cited as motivators to breastfeed, but were later advantages of breastfeeding that women enjoyed. Candy was a participant that as a teen mom at the age of 15 decided that she was going to breastfeed out of cost and convenience because her mother was also a single mother. And so her story was very interesting, and I'll tell you about it later when we get to gaps in breastfeeding support. So as far as where were they getting their education for breastfeeding during pregnancy, WIC was very influential for them. Their WIC peer counselors were very influential for them. Infant health So the benefits listed here is kind of also what motivated them to breastfeed. There was some uncertainty for about 4 participants once they got to the hospital. They had ambivalence about whether they were still going to commit to breastfeeding or not. Some tried to formula feed, and when formula wasn't being digested well for their infants, they then went back to breastfeeding. And for most participants, if they breastfed the first child, then they continued breastfeeding the second child. In the beginning, it was hard, was the theme for initiating breastfeeding. Mothers described a variety of breastfeeding challenges. For example, having a baby that had a congenital heart defect, having a delay in lactogenesis, or for example, that participant I told you that had the life-threatening health complication with HELLP syndrome. Overall, sufficient hospital lactation support was described, but they did express with anger about getting formula samples or also getting breastfeeding survival kits that were sponsored by Similac. And they did notice a difference between if their provider was a midwife or an OBGYN, with midwives being more supportive of breastfeeding. WIC peer counselors were described as heaven sent, which just kind of advocates for the peer counselor program as being a reason we need to give more funding to that program. Pumping breast milk, all moms describe some effort to try to pump. Those that were able to stay at home felt that pumping was an extra chore, an unnecessary thing to add if you're already a busy mom, and if you can feed from the breast, they would recommend first-time moms to do that. Dedication, patience, commitment, and sacrifice is what it took as a mother to breastfeed long-term. So the length of breastfeeding per child ranged from 5.6 months to 16 months. Breastfeeding was second nature by the time you got to 6 months because you're in tune with your body and also with the baby and can introduce other foods. As we know, a good support system specifically for having their mothers and their partners was influential in them continuing to breastfeed. Also seeing their infant's thriving health and also that mother-child connection through bonding is also what kept them breastfeeding longer term. And when breastfeeding got challenging, realizing that, hey, it's not for forever, let me put the infant at the center of what I'm doing, focusing on the infant's health and well-being is another thing that helped them. Developing tricks of the trade, whether that meant bringing a shirt that smelled like you to grandma's house when she kept the baby, or keeping an ice cooler in your trunk when you're pumping in between classes, or using fenugreek, or co-sleeping, or going to school online so that you can continue to have that bond with your baby. Were just a variety of some of the tricks of the trade that mothers described. So gaps in breastfeeding support is aligns with what the other panelists have already said. Push the issue more. There were few prenatal conversations about breastfeeding, and their OBGYNs were described as pretty much not, if you, they didn't bring it up, it was like a don't ask, don't tell. If you don't bring up breastfeeding, then they won't bring up breastfeeding. There are mixed baby-friendly hospital practices. Oh, we'll help you breastfeed, but here's formula sample just in case. I only had one participant, and she was a WIC peer counselor, that mentioned going to a support group. And she felt that it was very cliquish. It was mostly Caucasian. And even though she knew the women, she just didn't feel that she belonged there. A lack of African-American WIC PCs, lactation counselors, and the like to role model breastfeeding, and a need for breastfeeding accommodation in public spaces, and also just a lack of positive African-American breastfeeding images and using celebrities, churches, and radio stations to help promote breastfeeding. So the main take-home message is that current breastfeeding promotion methods to my participants were not, they didn't feel like it was culturally sensitive. It was up to them to kind of have that agency to kind of navigate their decision to breastfeed for themselves. And as the panel mentioned, that there's different historical and sociocultural complexities that we need to take in mind when we do research on African American women and breastfeeding. But I think the strength of this study, by using qualitative methods and positive deviance, kind of filled a gap in the literature to bring voice to actual long-term breastfeeding experiences of participants. And we have numerous opportunities if we use a socio-ecological approach ranging from the mother to the media level on how we can better promote breastfeeding. Can I read this pretty please? May I pretty please read this quote? Okay. We've got to first learn that breastfeeding is for us. I truly stand behind the fact that in addition to having all the women, all moms breastfeed, that these African-American women, like the Hispanic women, we need our own thing. We need something separate too. Our culture is different. Our women are different. Just like the hair salon, we got our own type of hairstylist. I think we need our own community for breastfeeding too. Then that's when we can go and pull and call on the older generation that can stand behind us in breastfeeding. Thank you.
I'd like to thank all of our presenters, and we have a few minutes now for questions. Come on, I'm sure you have questions. Yes, yeah.
Yes, I'll repeat the question. So the question was, if we look to see if there's any correlation between advice given and behavior, and then also who are these healthcare providers, right?
What their personal experience
right.
led them to advise.
The personal experience that led them to advise. We don't know about the personal experience of the healthcare providers because we didn't ask healthcare providers. But what is interesting is that we grouped together, I think there was, I don't remember, it's either 17 or 19 of the 287 network members listed were healthcare providers. And that could be anything from a WIC nutritionist to a lactation consultant to a nurse to a physician. So we lumped them all together because it was so small. But in terms of how does the advice lead to behavior, the only thing that we found significant, and we could only look at initiation because we had mothers with babies varying in age from just a few days to almost a full year. So in terms of initiation, the one thing that was significant, actually, was whether or not they had received advice to use a combination method. And not necessarily whether or not they had received advice to exclusively formula feed. And so because the amount of healthcare providers are so small, and because most healthcare providers provided advice to exclusively breastfeed, we didn't see that fall out in terms of initiation behavior. But what we did see was that people whose opinion are important and people who provide emotional support are more likely to be the ones that provide advice to use a combination method, and receiving that kind of advice was correlated with initiation.
Yes.
think we have time for one more. Was your hand up earlier? Who's that directed? Any of them?
I have one comment that was interesting that I think about. So both of our hair is natural. One of my professors mentioned that with the natural hair movement, when she transitioned her hair to being natural, she then thought of what other ways she could incorporate a natural lifestyle. And that went with breastfeeding, that went with having a midwife over OBGYN. And so I do think that you are seeing some of that. I haven't seen a study that said that.
I'm just wondering.
But several of my participants did have natural hair and were trying to have more natural lifestyle as well.
In the back.
With African American women or who are themselves African American women or Hispanic women to engage.
And I think everything we've learned, whoops, sorry. And I think each of us attending here, we can take home the messages that we're not have in our states that will help in the same area. So thank all of the presenters today for being here. And thank you guys for attending.
Did everyone sign in?
Oh, and...